This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFA Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.
And so people will say, and I'm not trying to, people will say that, oh, your forests are devastated. And they are. They're gone for the most part. But I try to tell people that we're in an enviable position because we are in a do-over position. So now we can look at all values from the core up instead of just timber. So we can look at everything from all values and say, what needs to be on the land base? Is timber one of those things? Great. Wildlife, water, fisheries, all of those things that are important to all can now be looked at without the timber being number one. So
that is the District Municipality of Vanderhoof Mayor Kevin Moutre, who made that comment during a July 7th press conference hosted by Sykes First Nation and the District of Vanderhoof, both approximately located in the geographic center of the province of British Columbia, 1 hour's drive away from Prince George City Center. Mayor Moutre made that comment on the tail end of an explanation of what caused the challenges and changes to the local forestry industry, which then led to the partnership being announced at this press conference. An announcement where both entities jointly called for a new, locally driven approach to forestry, protecting forest health, supporting local jobs, and respecting local decision-making. The District Municipality of Vanderhoof was incorporated in 1926, and the Nation of Sykes has existed since time immemorial. Of course, an incredible amount of change and development has occurred over the past roughly 100 years, and it's almost needless to say that amidst a history of disruptive colonial activity, the two entities have not always seen eye to eye on many issues. This occasion, however, marks a significant acknowledgement of a shared interest between both Sykes First Nation and the District of Vanderhoof. Between the stated depletion of forest resources and the departure of larger industry marked by Canfor's decision to close the Plateau sawmill in Vanderhoof in December 2024, it would appear that both parties are looking to change the way things are done in their area. Sykes Councillor Melanie Labatch emphasized this sentiment.
So allow this to be a ripple effect. Allow this, seeing how we can be collaborative and connect. You know what? We're not always going to agree on things, but we're going to make the commitment to sit here and work together. And how can we look ahead so our great-great-grandchildren have something collectively? So,
this press release, hosted by Sykes Nation and the District of Vanderhoof, calling for innovative local forestry solutions, does not occur in a vacuum. Earlier this summer, on June 30th, 2026, the publicly traded company Canfor sold its Plateau sawmill, located less than 20 kilometers west of downtown Vanderhoof, which it had closed in December 2024, to a partnership of four First Nations development companies, including Sykes First Nation, Stilaton, Claylitene, Sykes, and Nadlewuten First Nations, all came together to purchase the Plateau sawmill with all its included properties and materials, along with the industrial-zoned lands in the District of Vanderhoof, to create the new Nechaco Industrial Park. More than just forestry activity can be held in this industrial park. For example, BC Hydro just assumed a four-year lease in that park for the North Coast Transmission Line Phase 1. The 1,070-acre site includes a rock quarry and rail access, and it's important to note that all previous Plateau sawmill equipment is included in the sale. Should the group choose to reopen the mill, there are already several components, bits and pieces in place that could allow that to happen more easily. Reopening that Plateau sawmill, though, is another question entirely, and we'll be keeping our ear to the ground for any developments on that. Between the creation of this new Nechaco Industrial Park and the announcement of a partnership between Sykes Nation and the District of Vanderhoof, a shift in the local economic landscape can be noted. When Canfor closed the Plateau sawmill, that resulted in an annual loss of $580,000 in tax revenue for the municipal district, roughly equivalent to 11% of its tax base. Having the newly minted Nechaco Industrial Park operating in the area helps to stem that fiscal blood loss. One of the many factors influencing the future of the Plateau Sawmill and other related forestry industry development in the area, including what is harvested and how much, is Asaika's Nation's Land Use Management Plan, which balances a number of land-based values, which are not only assessed based on monetary value. One of the mills that is still operating in the area is the Nechaco Lumber Company, immediately west of downtown Vanderhoof. Owned by Sinclair Group Forest Products Limited, the facility, originally built in 1969, with processing small pine in mind, a decision that ought to help it operate into the future. Still, to operate, it needs a steady supply of raw materials to operate. In relation to this, the group assembled for the press release was asked whether secondary growth or replanted forests were ready for harvest in the Vanderhoof Community Forest or in Sika's traditional territory as a potential option for timber or fiber supply. Sika's Nation Chief Priscilla Mueller explained the reality of that situation.
Yeah, I would just say, as far as I know, the second growth is there's none. And yeah, I don't think we'll be fully logging in a sustainable way for another like 50 to 70 years, maybe, as far as I know.
You're right.
To touch on what both Chief and Mayor have said, I think getting out of the quantity over quality, wood is the biggest thing. The greatest threat to forestry jobs is not sustainable management. It's running out of a healthy forest. And that's what we're up against, and that's what we're moving forward with.
That's Sika's counselor, Robbie Antoine. A topic of conversation that has emerged regularly over the past several years has been the value of beetle kill timber, and as forest fires have become an ongoing part of our reality, the value of burned forests and blowdown has come into question. When the group was asked how they were assessing that value, perhaps a quantity versus quality assessment, Chief Mueller returned to the concept of land-based values and mentioned that it's a topic of ongoing conversation. Whereupon District of Vanderhoof Councillor Brian Frankel joined in to describe the concept he is adapting to as well.
On the land is really important.
Yeah, just to add to Chief Mueller's comments, if I could, I think she's bang on. There's value in blowdown. We just haven't determined that yet as a group and the framework. And so that value may be timber, but it may be biodiversity and animals and other things as well. So to me, wearing my old timber hat, yes, I would have wanted to go get it, but that's not what this agreement is about yet. This is about looking at values of that. And so is it marten habitat? Is it all of those other things? And that's what we're learning together as we go through this.
According to the press release, Sika's Nation has spent several years developing a long-term land use plan designed to restore forest health while maintaining a sustainable fiber supply for local mills and forestry workers in the region. Despite the shrinking fiber and timber supply due to the aforementioned depletion of forest resources, harvesting does continue to operate in the area. The parties involved have a stated interest in supporting and attempting to maintain economic activity in the area, but expanding that activity does not seem like a prudent move at this time, as Vanderhoof Mayor Kevin Moutre and Sika's Chief Priscilla Mueller describe here when asked about the possibility of perhaps opening yet another mill.
Building new mills isn't really in the economic climate now. What we really need to focus on is we have one strong surviving mill standing.
For clarity, the mill being referenced is an Nechaco Lumber Company just on the west edge of the town of Vanderhoof, owned by Sinclair Group Forest Products Limited. It is currently operating on one shift, but with a sufficient supply of raw materials, it could be operating at two shifts.
We need to make sure that we shore up their supply of fiber and keep them moving. In reality, manufacturing is just going to head towards larger centers unless we can keep those small town operations surviving.
Priscilla here. Yeah, I totally agree. Keep this one mill going. Let's bring it back to where it was before. We only have about 137,000 cubic meters of sustainable wood that we could harvest. We have a big licensee that's taking about 600,000 cubic meters out of our area. So we want that fiber kept here. And to build a new mill, I think those days are over, but we do have one mill here that we could keep going and we could keep the families working.
So while there is active industrial harvesting taking place, the aim is to prevent that material from leaving the area in the hopes that processing it locally benefits local communities. A business model like this, though, does not really align with the larger corporate models that have operated within our region for several years. Some of these corporations are large enough to be publicly traded on the stock market. That type of business model features a collective of shareholders. Shareholders buy into the company at a certain value and hope that the shares that they hold ever increase in value. In order for that to happen, the company would have to produce more goods to sell more goods. And when looking at a forestry company, that could mean harvesting ever more forest resources to create ever more products to sell and earn ever more profit. The business model that the District of Vanderhoof and Sika's First Nation are describing does not sound as if it would operate like these larger corporate publicly traded business models. We asked if they felt their vision of a local economy based on development of forest resources would fit within British Columbia's larger forestry industry. District of Vanderhoof Councillor Brian Frankel was the first to respond.
Personally, I think our communities are more worried about the economy around it and them. So the provincial economy and the forest economy is not what this is about today. This is about our community in the area that surrounds our communities. So I would say that we're going to focus on keeping us in a sustainable fashion through this framework. And what happens with the rest of the province, they'll have to figure that out. But this is what we're trying to do as two communities right now.
SICA's Councillor Robbie Antoine.
I can't to add to that. Our land use plan is a result of years of technical analysis, traditional knowledge, and local expertise and collaboration. There's still fiber available to support local mills. It must be managed carefully and responsibly.
SICA's Councillor Melanie Labatch also commented.
The way that that end of that question made me think that we have Indigenous rights. There's Indigenous peoples on these lands. So we've had the Supreme Court of Canada remind, you know, so we're not going anywhere. And I think that business isn't going to be done the way it always was before. We have voices, we have knowledge, and we're here. And I do think that when we work together, we're greater.
Ken Young, just after hearing from Elder Antoine here and others, I think, and we also heard the word opportunity. And thinking about the opportunities that are out there, and the opportunities now the government has to work with communities such as ourselves here, as we've come together and our relationship is continuing to evolve in a very positive manner. But I think going forward, there's a real opportunity for our provincial government to work with communities such as SICA's and Vanderhoof and say, we can do things to make sure that these communities stay resilient, they stay vital, and they continue to grow. We can rebuild these forests. It's going to take a long, long time, and we have to do things different, and it can't fit in that same box that we did before. As everybody in that end of the room has already stated, there are opportunities for the government to step forward at this time, and they have to stop looking at the resources in this area as being something that is portable and that can be moved whenever industry decides to leave and give up their social impact positivity for so many years and just pull that out. We have to find ways to ensure that the government hears us, sees these positive moves that we've been making, and can actually come to the table with us. And that's not so much a negative thing in terms of what I'm saying. I'm saying this is a challenge that you can help us do better here by coming on side with us. And I think there is some movement in that direction, and I truly hope so.
SICA's Councillor Regina Carlson also took the opportunity to clarify.
You know, we support local forestry and the forestry workers, and we're not saying no to forestry. We are saying yes to responsible forestry. The greatest threat to the forestry jobs is not sustainable management. It's running out of our healthy forests. The remaining fiber supply should support the local jobs, local manufacturers, and long-term economic stability wherever possible, you know. And that's important here for both our councils, is keeping that supply here in our community.
Kevin Moutre, Mayor of Vanderhoof, just would say that the fiber just isn't there. So business as usual isn't an option, because that would just deplete it, and then we have nothing. Now is the time for big moves. The majors have done us no favors. They've moved on. They've gone elsewhere. We need a big move that can take that volume away from the majors and redistribute it so that the local mills can make a living, the local people can make a living, and we can move forward in a sustainable manner.
Priscilla here. What I'd like to say is our communities need to play a greater role.
The province need to look at us as a government. And when we sit at the table, that we're equal partners at the table. And SICAS right now has a, you know, I think about a death by 1,000 cuts. Do we want to go down that road? No, we don't. But we have a pretty good case to move forward with that. And so we need the province to treat us as equals and treat us as partners and that our communities have a voice. Thank you.
For comment on this partnership and the collaboration between SICAS First Nation and the District of Vanderhoof, calling for solutions to sustain forests and protect regional jobs, happening alongside the collaborative endeavor between four regional First Nations of opening the Nechako Industrial Park, roughly 18 kilometers west of downtown Vanderhoof, we contacted the regional provincial elected representative, member of the Legislative Assembly, or MLA, for Nechako Lakes Riding, Mr. John Rustat, a BC Conservative Party member who is recently the official opposition critic for Indigenous Relations, but now critic for Treasury Board. We got to talk about a number of things, but we asked him early on how he felt about SICAS First Nation and the District of Vanderhoof's approach to what appears to be an alternative model adapting within the BC forestry industry. Part of the announcement, it seemed to be the development of a approach where creation of wood fiber and the value-added products that go with it would be done in a way that doesn't necessarily rely on the same model that we've seen through, say, larger entities, corporations, say, such as Canfor, which are publicly traded companies or listed on the TSX. They've got shareholders to answer to. And the idea is that, you know, the company keeps growing in value and so on. And it sounds like the approach is to put those ideas to the side and just focus on what can be done locally within the local economy with the labor force and with the resources that is there. Kind of a scaling down into something smaller and more manageable. When you think about the future of forestry in the district in BC, say in northern BC, do you think that has a place? Does that fit with your vision of the future of forestry within our northern region of the province?
Yeah, there's no question in my mind that we have to think about forestry different. We have to look at utilizing the entire tree. I mean, you've got to leave the woody debris behind for the furry little critters, and you've got to do all the environmental sides and making sure that, you know, our forests are managed properly. But having said that, we should be trying to use as much of the tree as possible. And that means thinking about forestry differently. So it's not just the primary breakdown of saw logs, but looking at a fiber annual allowable cut, looking at what we can do with all that additional fiber, the jobs that are created, a one-touch process going into the forest and bringing it all in, and then a multiple processing facility where you might have pellets and power. You might be producing other types of products, even things like post and rail, as well as, of course, your primary breakdown. And so that makes sense to try to do it things differently. The question still remains, can it be done economically? And that's the most important piece here. There's a reason why our forest sector is in so much trouble in British Columbia, because right now the cost of fiber is so high that it makes it uneconomical in many areas of the province to be able to carry on forest operations. Now, we're fortunate that lumber prices are fairly high and the tariffs, the anti-dumping, and of course, the duties that have been on top of our, have made it also very, very difficult. Those need to be negotiated. We need to resolve those issues. But the cost of doing business in British Columbia is just so prohibitive that it's going to be interesting to see how the First Nation Consortium, you know, along with Vanderhoof, are going to look at trying to do business differently in British Columbia and to get around that cost structure that this government has imposed on our forest sector.
Do you feel that your representation as the MLA for the district and their operations have a bright future together? Do these two things coexist happily, or are you really hoping that there's going to be, another larger corporate heavy lifter, kind of like a Canfor, that can come back to northern BC and carry on operations? What do you think in those terms?
So I think any idea that comes forward, small, large, medium, doesn't matter, needs to be considered to be able to utilize the fiber that we have to create the jobs to support the communities and to support the families. And anything that goes along those lines, I'm interested in supporting. But I'm also a very strong believer in math. because, you know, excuse the language, but math is impervious to BS. And so the math is the math. If it is, if it's economical, great. Let's figure out how we do it. Let's support it. Let's make sure it can happen. Subsidies from government is not economical. Now, you can, government could step up to the plate to start with some things, but it has to be able to become economical. And I've always said that if a project is viable, money is never a problem, because you can go and you can loan money. You can, you know, banks or other institutions, other even corporations, you can get access to capital if you have a successful business model that can generate revenue. And so I look at any sort of business model, any kind of approach from that perspective. Can it be economically viable? Can it be sustainable? Can it create the jobs and the promise while not having to have government put money into it to prop it up?
And I guess when it comes to the idea of value-added products and creating something beyond the typical raw material economy, what kind of initiatives have you seen that hold promise within our province or within Canada? Or what have you seen that you would like to see more of in northern BC?
Well, you look at, you know, you start, first of all, once again, with the access to the fiber, the tree that comes in to be processed. You look at our timber harvesting land base, you look at Sweden's timber harvesting land base. They're almost identical in size. They're similar climates as to Sweden to us. Their annual allowable cut is around 100 million cubic meters a year. Our annual allowable cut is around 62 million cubic meters a year. However, we're cutting probably around 28 million cubic meters per year. So they are getting close to four times as much fiber out of the same landscape and the same growing conditions in Sweden than we are. And what are they doing with that additional fiber? They have a host of different products that are being produced, a host of different processes that are using the fiber that we're not even considering. So we need to do a complete rethink in terms of how our fiber is made available, what we can do with that fiber, and the structure that needs to be put in place to make sure that we can see the investment needed in our sector.
When it comes to pushing the current Ministry of Forests to take a look at these alternative practices of managing forests and so on, how do you get your voice and the voice of this region into their ears? What do you like to do?
Well, I think, I mean, not to be overly political, but we need a change of government, because it's pretty clear that the current government has no real interest in our forest sector. They've simply decided to manage decline. But the fact that the chief forester, who is independent, who is not political, who just looks at the facts, says that our annual allowable cut could be 62 million cubic meters, and yet our government will only allow us to be able to cut about 27, 28 million cubic meters because of all the process and problems and issues that they put in place. So it's clear that this government has not got a real interest in our forest sector. But I think that the biggest thing that needs to be done is, once again, we need to think about our forest sector in terms of fiber, not just in terms of saw log. And, you know, the difference is significant, because if you're accounting for the whole tree, now you've got to be able to think about what you're utilizing in that whole tree in terms of your cost structure and in terms of the products that can be produced.
When it comes to trying to sweet talk the ministry into doing things that benefit our region, do you ever, I don't know, make appointments with them with a nice bottle of like spring tonic harvested from local birch water here in the region and meet over a nice beverage or something like that? Do you folks meet up and just try to convince each other of things?
Well, I have had the opportunity to get together, and it's one of the things that, you know, would come with a few years of experience. And, you know, of course, I've been a politician for quite a few years. You know, I'll sit down from time to time and have a scotch with some of my NDP colleagues, including the Minister of Forests. And we do have some casual chats about policy approach and try to make it constructive. And I have tried to do my best to provide constructive ideas as well. Unfortunately, politics often gets in the way. And this government is far more concerned about their environmental vote than they are doing what's right for our forest sector. And so I understand that. That's where they're at as a government. But it makes it very difficult to be able to see policy come forward that could actually be really beneficial for our forest sector, and particularly for our region of the province.
In our conversation with Mr. Rustad, we were able to touch on some of the possibilities within his vision for the future of BC forestry industry, partially influenced by the models in place in socialist countries like Sweden, and how to go about making some of those changes. During the District of Vanderhoof and SAIKA's First Nation joint press release, when the panel was asked about the possibilities of being able to use secondary forests, referring to replanted forests in this situation, the panelists didn't necessarily have an optimistic view of using that regrowth forest anytime soon for industrial purposes, but did make reference to some practices that are similar to those in place in some of these socialist countries within the Nordic model of forestry. Here's a clip of Mayor Kevin Moutre reflecting on some of these more management-intensive methods.
Incremental harvesting or commercial thinning is something we should be looking at. It's not enough to support the industry, so there is still need for primary forests to be harvested. But we need to be doing those trials and look at what do we want that commercial thin to look like so we can go out there. So it's not just a grab of our future trees. We're actually improving the stands. They're going to be a better product in the end. So there's a lot of work to do on the ground. It's not the solution for everything, but it is a part of the solution.
Before we concluded our talk with MLA John Rustad, we circled back to the collaborative proposition between SAIKA's Nation and the Vanderhoof District, as well as a multi-First Nation partnership to purchase and operate the Nechako Industrial Park. As the elected representative for the Nechako Lakes Riding, let's say the new Nechako Industrial Park and this collaboration between the District of Vanderhoof and SAIKA's Nation starts to take off and they're heading in a positive direction. How do you think your office can best support their operations moving ahead?
Well, I think, and it's whether it's municipalities or whether it's companies within my area or even outside of the area, if they come forward with ideas, approaches, come forward with issues that need to be resolved from a provincial perspective, they can approach my office and I will certainly advocate to the best of my ability for those changes or for that access that is needed to try to make sure that government gets out of the way and allow it to be successful. So that's the job of an MLA, and I take that very seriously and try to do the best I can with it.
As the ecological and economic landscape of BC's forest changes, lots of people are starting to have lots of ideas of how to do things. On the economic perspective, we wanted to zoom out and ask someone with a lot of experience what they thought about the future of the forest industry in northern BC. Someone who's been working, operating, moving, shaking in this area for roughly 60 years is entrepreneur John Brink. He started off in forestry here in British Columbia, Canada in the mid-1960s. For the long story short, eventually cut his teeth as an entrepreneur in Watson Lake, Yukon, came back down to Prince George, opened up a value-added manufacturing company we now know as Brink Forest Products, and he continues to wear many hats.
I've since built two or three different sawmills, and obviously I've been very involved in the organizations of mills and all of that. So I'm still the owner of a number of companies. We have four silos. The one is lumber manufacturing. The other silo is warehousing, distribution, logistics, interior warehousing. I fully own that. The third one is real estate, residential, commercial, and industrial. And the fourth one is media. I'm an author. I'm working on my sixth and seventh book. The seventh one be history of the BC forest industry and dealing with all the history of the forest industry in British Columbia. Obviously, I'm a very active presenter and speaker. And then the other one, I'm probably one of the top podcasters in Canada. And globally, I'm 0.01% globally.
You can catch our interview in its entirety here on CFUR 88.7 FM and CFUR.ca in its entirety later this August. But for now, here's Mr. Brink laying out what he sees as perhaps the most significant obstacles in the current economic landscape of northern BC's forest industry.
So where do we go from here? That obviously capital is leaving. If you want to, most of the mills have been shut down. But I say now around northern BC, if I go to Fort Nelson, Fort St. John, Chetwynd, McKenzie, Bear Lake, Fraser Lake, Vanderhoof, Houston, I can go on and on and on and on. It's a graveyard of sawmills. Will it change? No. And then who controls the tenure in the timber? With all due respect to my friend Jimmy Patterson, who owns the Patterson Group of Companies, Jimmy Patterson controls 52% of Canfor, whatever they have left here, including the pulp mills, and they control 14% or 13% of West Fraser. Between those two companies, and bringing us back to how much of the AAC now, 60 million cubic meters, is available to investors that have sawmills. Because of all the issues, the political ones, UNDRIP, all of the other things and duties, is that of the 60 million cubic meters available, the objective of government is to try to make available 45 million cubic meters annually. They have not been successful in doing that. In fact, in 2026, the volume was about 26 million cubic meters. That then being said, and all those other sawmills being taken down and sold for scrap, are we going to build a new sawmill? No. Who would and why? And what does a new sawmill cost today? At least $250 million. So if you want to attract capital, it doesn't take the $200 study to suggest the opportunity. It is obvious that capital is not ready to come back to BC in the forest industry. Where do we go from here?
So here, Mr. Brink has illustrated a setting in which new innovation, new investment, and new entrepreneurship does not necessarily have a lot of room to breathe in. And some would deduct then that change is difficult to initiate in such an environment. So I took the opportunity to pick his brain on what he thought an instance of entrepreneurship might look like if, for example, the conglomerate of four different First Nations development corporations, including Stilatin, Nadle Wuten, Klaili Tene, and Saikas, decided to reopen the now currently closed Plateau sawmill formerly owned by Canfor. Could it resemble the type of company that operated back in the 60s or 70s when things were smaller, locally owned, and the forest resources were locally sourced? FYI, we're not talking about Sinclair Group's Nechaco Lumber Company on the edge of Vanderhoof, but the Plateau sawmill 18 kilometers west of Vanderhoof. I wanted to know if he thought they could make a go of it in his estimation. You think they'll be able to source expertise locally to get it going? There's probably capable hands in the area that could make this run.
Okay.
I don't know, what do you think?
Would you invest in it?
Why not?
Okay, so there you go.
My entire life savings? No, I wouldn't do that for anything, though, you know?
So what I'm saying, with all due respect, there has to be a viable opportunity. And this does not even come close to comparing to the mid-60s when timber was available in the province of British Columbia. And again, right, as I said earlier.
And this is probably the key difference, is that availability of forest resources,
correct,
basically.
Is that it goes back to H.R. McMillan.
H.R. McMillan, or Harvey Reginald McMillan, was the province's first chief forester, appointed in 1912. This set the stage for a lot of BC forestry industry policy. And in our current setting, the chief forester sets the AAC, or the annual allowable cut, which is a maximum volume of timber available to be legally harvested from BC's public forests each year.
It goes back to H.R. McMillan that they say as long as we have consolidation, and at some point that these companies that control all the tenure will decide that they don't intend to further invest but still control the tenure, is not good for the communities or for investment in this amazing resource that we have here.
So in the scenario described, this begs the question, how do other players get in and get involved?
First and foremost, what we need to do, deal with the issues that we're dealing with today, with wildfires and a forest that is burning down and burning up. What do we do to protect our communities, and what can we do to have forest policy and dealing with the future of the communities? You know, global warming is with us in a big way. So we have to pay attention to that. The second one is that there has to be coherence between First Nations, federal government, provincial government, and communities to first and foremost attract and maintain entrepreneurship. That's how it all starts. Entrepreneurs have ideas and can put things together that attracts capital. But there has to be an environment of in which we can do that. If we pay 45% in duties and still have between the United States and Canada and other places, no agreement. Again, on the 19th, we're going to add another 50% duties to other things that it is obvious for anyone that is watching the news that the U.S. economy is not doing well. They're in desperate needs to build houses. There is no question in anybody that has knowledge that once they start building and single homes, about 1.5 million starts annually. Right now, we are somewhere around half that. If they start there, they are desperately in need for lumber products to build those houses with. They do not have it in the United States. They must rely on others, which likely is Canada. What then means that today's prices, because supply and demand sets price, that as long as we have still manufacturing capacity in North America that are not meeting the requirements or have more than the market requires, prices stay low. Once they start demanding, then the duties will be added to the price. And lumber prices that today may be around $500 or $600 a thousand board feet will go to $1,200. In my opinion, that's where we will be by next summer.
So there's an interesting prediction for lumber prices next year. But referring to John Brink's idea that stability is needed to attract investors, and that stability has to be fostered through clear communication between all levels of government, First Nations, and local communities, the announcement between SICA's First Nation and the District of Vanderhoof sounds like a step in that direction. A critical perspective to consider in the context not just of the SICA's Nation and District of Vanderhoof announcement, not just the Nechako Industrial Park being purchased by conglomerations of four different First Nations, but considering the longer-term future of our regional forestry industry in northern BC. A panelist that took the time to share their perspective was Elder and Counselor of SICA's First Nation, Marilyn Antoine, who's also experienced firsthand the impact of the forestry industry on her home as she knows it.
People were hunters and gatherers. We depended on the forest for our survival. We hunted in those forests for our moose hide here, an example, and even the frame. That was not the frame that they made. They used a different. And now that's all gone. That's why they refer to using that. Also, they gathered medicine. Our areas for gathering medicine is all devastated. You have to go further and further to find the medicine. The traditional healers need that medicine to help people. Our community always had special people in the community. There was always one that they called Keo Wadachan. That means he was the pillar of the community. And it was usually a traditional chief. And that traditional chief taught his people about the culture, how to look after the land, how to sustain it, respect the land, because in the future, it was for our children, our grandchildren. Today, you want to take our grandchildren out in the forest? It's all clear cut. What are we going to teach them? All the plants are gone. All the trees are gone, the different types. And that was part of the practice, was teaching our children how to live. Also, they always said, they taught us that in the future, the forest is going to be devastated, like when the pine beetle came, it was a natural occurrence. It was to replenish that forest. That happened, and even that, they made profit out of. And to me, that's not respect. It's not for the land. It's for profit. That was never in our culture, was never use the forest for that. It was to help our people survive and to teach our children in the future. And when you see today, if you took a helicopter ride, you'll see how the forest is all cut down and it affects everything. The winds get stronger because there's no trees to protect. And if there's a fire, you know that the fire moves quicker on land. And it's just totally devastating. And for the forest to have regrowth, it takes years and years. And maybe our great-grandchildren will see those forests again. But our children of today, they're not learning out in their culture, out on the land and out on the waters. I just want to remind that the respect has to go both ways. The government has to respect our traditional practice and our culture. And we have to collaborate with them, not be excluded in partnerships or excluded in decision-make. That's really important. And today we're working with Vanderhoof, collaborating, working with them so that in the future there's something there for our children. Thank you for listening.
That was Counselor and Elder Marilyn Antoine of Saika's First Nation, describing some of the history and context of her nation's relationship with Saika's traditional territory. In the complex setting of the northern BC forestry industry and environment, these are some of the voices making decisions that affect our communities. British Columbia Minister of Forest Ravi Parmar did make mention on Mr. Brink's On the Brink podcast, episode 581, that he might visit northern BC's interior in late August 2026. Also mentioned in that episode was Mr. Parmar's desire to support a tenureship policy change that would move from volume-based tenureship to area-based tenureship, which sounds an awful lot like the approach that Saika's First Nation and the District of Vanderhoof described in their press release. So we sent off a query to see if the Ministry of Forests agree. We haven't heard back in time for deadline, but if we do hear back, we'll do a follow-up just for you, dear listener. But until then and afterwards, we're listening for updates that bump down the Forest Service Road along with you, so we can share them here on CIFR Radio. This is Ian Gregg reporting for CIFR Radio's Due North on 88.7 FM. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada through the Local Journalism Initiatives Program. Find our news stories online at frequencynews.ca or cfur.ca.